Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay in the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
What's up, buds?
This end hit along the wall, a puck to the left point, kept in by Orpik, down in front, a shot, and they score! And it's Devontae Smith-Pelly on a save at the left point! DSP save of the day! We're tied at three with 10:08 to go! How about Devontae? The Caps with life here in game five!
Back to Japers Rink Radio. I'm your host, Adam Stringham, and today I'm happy to be joined by John Press. How you doing, John?
I'm pretty good. How are you, Adam?
Oh, I'm doing great. We're recording this on the 9th. The Capitals are coming off of another late collapse where they gave up a goal. How much time was left last night, John?
A couple minutes.
Yeah, to kind of snatch defeat from the jaws of at least the jaws of a draw this time rather than the jaws of victory. But let's talk a little bit about the Caps. What's going right? What's going wrong? Easy thing to start with is goaltending. How do you think Phoenix Copley did last night?
Not great. I think he was okay. But that he let that trickler in the third period, and that was just a gut punch. You know, the team blew. You know, I tweeted after the game that's a bad loss, and you know, obviously, but it really highlighted what the team's biggest issues are right now, right? Because you look at the special teams, and they largely sucked. They did get the Kuznetsov goal on the power play, but you know, they gave up a couple power plays to a power play that's ranked even lower than theirs was, you know, in Columbus's. They didn't generate much of anything on their own power play. They did get the one goal. So special teams are a problem. They were a problem in that game. They were a problem in the Edmonton game right before the break. And they've been a problem for a couple months now, certainly on the power play, and the penalty kill hasn't been good in a long time either. So you got special teams and you got goaltending, which I think we'll circle back to, which wasn't great. It wasn't great against Edmonton. You know, you had Samsonov coming off that tremendous relief appearance that he made once Vanacek got hurt against the Pens the night before. And you know, it's kind of typical Samsonov. Every time you think that maybe this is it, maybe he's going to get on a roll, he just does the exact opposite, and you're back to not being able to trust this guy in goal. They had the blown leads that have plagued them all year. They had a 2-0 lead last night. They had a 3-2 lead. Both of those disappeared. They had, you know, no offensive production whatsoever, really from their top nine forwards at even strength, but they got their even strength goals from the fourth line. And part of that, you know, the coaching decisions to hardly play the nominal third line, you know? So a lot of the problems that you can identify with this team right now showed up in that Columbus game. And I mean, I guess if there's a silver lining of sorts to it, it's that these problems are all readily identifiable. I mean, they're right there. There's no mystery to why this team's not winning games and not playing well. And most of those things were on display in that game against Columbus.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned blown leads. The Capitals gave up goals in the last 5 or 6 minutes to lose in regulation in their last two appearances against Columbus and Edmonton. Granted, both of those games were pretty back and forth. It wasn't quite, you know, get a lead, hold on to it for 20 minutes, then blow it with just as time expires. But are you thinking that there's a mentality issue here, or what are your thoughts specifically about blown leads?
Well, and you know, just to add on to it, these were games at home. Another problem this team's had this year: no home ice advantage. Their home record stinks. I think they don't have a regulation win yet in calendar year 2022 at home. I could be wrong about that, but whatever it is, their record at home stinks. So they're not getting it done there. And, you know, four straight losses in regulation at home is no way to go through life. But, you know, this team has had a lot of lulls in the past around this time of year. These are kind of the dog days and everything. This one's a little more prolonged, and it's a little more troubling, I think. To me, what I would say is I think that what might be getting them right now is, yeah, mental. And I think that a huge part of that is the goaltending. And I think when you're out there playing hard, busting your ass, and then your goalie gives up some shitty goal, that's a backbreaker. You know, that sucks. And it's not all on the goalies. You know, surprisingly, actually, I looked at it, and prior to that game, in the previous 8 games, I think they had 7 games in which they gave up fewer goals than expected in all situations. So the goaltending, you know, certainly has been problematic. It maybe not as quite as big a problem as it seems that it is, but it seems that it's a big problem. And you know, when you're out there playing in front of that and working on it, and then your goalie can't hold a lead and lets something trickle through like Copley did, or comes out and gives up 3 goals in the first 5 minutes like Samsonov did against Edmonton, or, you know, whatever it is, I think that wears on you. And so you couple that with a team that has absolutely no confidence in its special teams right now, particularly the power play. And I think that they might be in their own heads a little bit. I think that that the team's not playing with the confidence and swagger that they have at other times, even in this season, but certainly in the past. And I think that it's taking a toll, and maybe it turns around or maybe it doesn't. It's hard to see it turning around it's hard to see the power play turning around without major changes to it. It's hard to see the goaltending situation changing with the guys that they've got here right now. So, you know, does this get better? I don't know. I mean, I don't I think it does. It just has to regress in some ways. But at the same time, you know, and I think we'll get to it later on in our discussion, you know, what it bounces back to, is still up for debate.
What did you think about the decision to go back to Samsonov after he had faced 45 shots in relief against Pittsburgh? I mean, you know, you talked about how important it is for a team to feel like they can rely on their goaltender. Samsonov, as you said, looked like he was kind of turning things around. As we, again, I agreed, we've said it dozens of times about him, but the head coach didn't exactly put his goaltender in a position to succeed there. The stats are pretty obvious about putting a goaltender in back to back.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. But at the same time, you know, NHL goalies can play back-to-back games. It happens. And the Caps, with Vanecek out, had one, you know, ostensibly NHL goalie on the roster. And so picking that guy over the what seems at this point to be pretty much a career AHL guy, you know, I don't necessarily hate it. It's an opportunity for Samsonov to take control of things. And like he has done many times in the past, when handed the opportunity, he just fucks it up. So, like, you know, yeah, you can say maybe Laviolette shouldn't have started him. Maybe he should have talked to his goalie coach. Maybe he should have gotten some feedback from the player. Maybe a lot of things. But, you know, there are NHL goalies who can play on back-to-back nights. There are AHL goalies who do it with some frequency. There, you know, it's not the biggest ask that's ever been made of a dude. And regardless, he came up real small in that situation. And it wasn't necessarily all on him. You know, maybe one of the goals was definitely on him. And the team just wasn't ready to play in general. But at some point, you need some stops. And, you know, you need to figure out whether this guy can be the guy or not. And so far, there's not much indication that he's ready to be that right now.
Yeah, that's fair. You talk about the team being ready to play. Not to harp too much on the Pittsburgh game, but of kind of all the games that the Capitals have won this year, that one definitely stands out as one that they unfortunately probably didn't deserve to win. I mean, they were hemmed in almost the entirety of the game, gave up 47 shots. I mean, just they were caved in a lot. Granted, Pittsburgh had a ton of power play opportunities. You then said they weren't ready to play the next night against Ottawa.
Edmonton,
sorry, excuse me. What are your kind of thoughts on this team being ready to play? What's lacking there, and what can be done to make them a bit more consistent?
Well, I mean, I think they still lead the league in first goals scored. So say what we want about them being ready to play from the word go. No teams open the game by getting the first goal more often than the Caps have. So that's good. You know, I'm not super worried about their starts in general. Obviously, that Edmonton game, it's the last game heading into the All-Star break. You had the Ovi wasn't available because of he popped positive for COVID. They had just come off that huge emotional win at Pittsburgh the night before. So, you know, whatever, you make excuses for whatever games you want, I guess. But I'm not super worried about their preparedness overall for these games. I'm more concerned with this team. I mean, Pittsburgh's a very good team, not to take anything away from them, but you know, what is this Caps team? You know, I don't think they're as good as they were early in the season when they were atop the division. I don't think they're as bad as they have been recently. But I think if we're being honest, and, you know, I wrote about this a little while ago on the site, maybe week or two ago. The Eastern Conference is absolutely stacked. And you look at the top of the conference and you've got your Carolinas and your Floridas and Tampa and Toronto. Those teams are all terrific. And then if you step down to Pittsburgh, another good team. Maybe the Rangers and Bruins and Caps are in sort of the tier below that. And I mean, the Caps, fortunate for them, the Islanders have crapped themselves this year. And so the Caps, you know, for all their struggles, do appear to be more or less a lock for the playoffs at this point. I don't think we have to worry too much about that, but you certainly have to worry about what happens when they get into the playoffs and they face one of those teams at the top, because they're getting ready to be curb stomped by any of them. You know, it's hard to see. You look down the list of goaltenders at the top of the conference, whether it's Freddie Anderson or Bobrovsky or Vasilevsky or Jack Campbell or Tristan Jarry, for that matter, or whoever you've got. Who on the Caps right now, which goalie on the Caps right now is going to outplay those goalies or play them even, or, you know, and if they play them even, do the Caps have a team with the special teams that they've been showing and the 5-on-5 play, which has been pretty good. But do they have a team that can, if the goalies play it even, that can beat any of those teams? And realistically, it's hard to say that they do. I mean, obviously anything can happen in a 7-game series, but you know, that's not a plan for going deep into the playoffs or anything. That's, you know, awfully optimistic and hopeful. And, you know, maybe they win a series or something, but you know, this team is in a spot right now, I think, where they have to make a decision, you know, that whether they try to do something big and get markedly better and put themselves in a position to compete with those other top teams in the conference, or whether they sort of, I mean, I don't want to say, they just kind of stand pat and hold and not move assets for what likely is going to be a pretty quick trip in the playoffs. You know, this team, what's the point of tweaking around the edges and bringing in a different third line right wing or third pair defenseman or something like that? You know, it's why bother?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of what Greg and I were talking about last week. And it was, you and I used to be able to talk about the Caps and say that if they got league average goaltending with the special teams and offensive talent that they have, they could go far in the playoffs. You know, all they needed was average goaltending. And I'm not sure that's the case anymore, especially with kind of the lack of top six scoring that we're seeing consistently right now. I mean, you talked about the Capitals probably not being as good as they were at the beginning of the year, and I think you're right, because Alex Ovechkin was playing the best hockey he's played, or the most productive hockey he's played, since his 07-08 season, and he's now on what's got to be getting close to probably his career-longest goal drought. Certainly he's not laying the lamp with anything close to the regularity over the last 15 games as he was to start the year. I mean, how dependent are the Capitals on Ovechkin's offense, and is there anybody else that they can get it from if he's not able to kind of turn it back on?
Yeah, I mean, they're too dependent on it, as has often been the story over the past 15, 17 years. You know, you like what you've seen from Kuznetsov this year, for sure. Tom Wilson, ditto. It would be really great to get Nick Backstrom back up to 100%. He looks to me to be still working his way back a little bit. But even if he does, right now he's got like a Connor Sherry on his wing, or you know, somebody of that caliber. It would be great to get TJ Oshie back. It'd be great to get Anthony Mantha back. and provide a little more of that scoring punch. Laviolette clearly doesn't have much interest in playing Daniel Sprong or Connor McMichael at any significant minutes. And, you know, to an extent, you can see sort of why when you see either one of them, particularly Sprong, on his half of the ice, you know, play the game. But at the same time, you know, they're not in a position, they're sort of in a beggars can't be choosers position. And I think that Sprong and McMichael are still clear net positive players, even though their defensive abilities sometimes leave something to be desired. I think you can mitigate that. And for whatever reason, Laviolette doesn't seem to be interested in doing that. And so he's overplaying his fourth line, which, you know, I don't even know why we call it a fourth line anymore, the Dowd line. And to their credit, Dowd and Hathaway have really been playing well. And, you know, but if you're playing three lines on an old injured team, what are we doing here? Like, what are we expecting to be left in the tank come April? You know, Sprong and McMichael are two of your younger, more offensively dynamic players. Let them eat some minutes, let them play, so that Alex Ovechkin maybe, just maybe, you know, doesn't hit the wall that you know, he seems to have hit in a lot of ways. You know, I haven't done the deep dive on his play over the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks or whatever. But certainly the numbers aren't where they were earlier in the season. And, my suspicion is that, the minutes he played earlier in the year when he was carrying the team are starting to add up. I mean, there are a lot of miles on those tires, and, he's a guy who, you watch him on the power play now, and we know the power play absolutely sucks. But this isn't, you know, it doesn't absolve Ovechkin from his role in that. And, you know, to the extent that it's not entirely coaching, and it's not, it's the scheme and the system on the power play is the primary problem with it. But the execution is something as well. And there, a lot of standing around. I mean, Alex Ovechkin stands around an awful lot on the power play these days. And I think that they all need some sort of shot in the arm to get rejuvenated. Because right now, the body language, the mojo, whatever you want to call it, whatever you want to look at, it's pretty negative. It's pretty ugly.
Yeah, and I pulled up his game log while we've been talking. It's not been quite as bad as I thought. He has gone 5 games without a goal, and his only point in that 5-game stretch was an assist against Columbus. So certainly not the kind of best run of play for Ovechkin. And, you know, he's going to have to be a big part of turning that around. I mean, you talk about him kind of standing still on the power play. Definitely, he's kind of always looked that way to me, but that doesn't mean that, unfortunately, when you got to add a wrinkle into the system, that means if Ovechkin's still going to be out there for the whole 2 minutes, he's probably going to have to move his legs a little bit more than he did in the past. And as you said, that might be asking a lot given all the minutes he's played so far this year. Greg and I talked a lot about the power play, but do you want to elaborate a little bit kind of on the system itself and whether you think why that might be failing? Or I'm not really sure how much you want to talk about it or what thoughts you have kind of more specifically.
No, I mean, it's obviously it's stale. Obviously, everyone knows what they're trying to do every time out there. And the result is what you've got. And Travis Yost, I don't know if you saw it the other day, he did a really interesting look at the best power plays in the league and what they're doing. And there's a handful of power plays that seem to have figured it out. And you look at their heat maps where they're shooting from on those power plays, and they are getting tons of chances inside scoring areas. And they're doing it largely with lateral passes, with movement, get the goalie moving side to side, quick passing and shifting and moving your players around. And Caps really aren't doing any of that. They are, you know, they are getting nothing from the interior, and that's typically TJ Oshie's spot on the power play. And Tom Wilson's not TJ Oshie, but they're not getting the shots there. And, you know, it's one thing for Wilson not to convert at Oshie's rate or whatever, but they're not even getting the looks. They're not getting the shots there. They're not working the puck down low. And they've missed Nick Backstrom quite a bit this year, and that's forced Kuznetsov onto the half wall and guys like Sherry or Eller down to that bumper spot to feed the guy in the middle. And those guys they're just not skilled enough to make those decisions and make those pinpoint passes. And so the result is everything gets pushed to the outside. There's no movement, and it's just not effective right now. And, you know, they have trouble entering the zone. They have trouble once they're there. And frankly, it's been a long, steady decline. They have kind of fallen off the cliff in over the past few months. But it needs to be changed, because, you know, to me, there's enough talent out there that that it should be more effective than it is. I mean, you could probably put five Hershey Bears skaters out there in a good system and be more effective than the Caps system is right now. And, you know, I've got a piece, it's a kind of a secondary concern, or, you know, maybe it's your primary concern. I'm not here to judge. I got a piece coming up on the site on Thursday about just trying to quantify sort of how many goals and how many points Alexander Ovechkin is losing by this power play being crappy. And, you know, every goal is going to matter for this guy as he's trying to chase down 99. And right now he's probably down four or five goals, maybe six goals, over where he would be at this point in the year on a good power play. And, you know, the longer they keep going with this shitty power play, the more it's going to hinder Ovechkin as he tries to go for that record.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you're keeping in sight the real goal. someone's got hey. To. I mean, I do remember when Ted Leonsis said that when Backstrom was getting his new contract, Backstrom outlined what Ovechkin had to do to beat Gretzky's record. So if it's Backstrom's focus, I'm happy it's your focus as well. Talking a little bit more about individual efforts, and you already touched on it briefly, but Evgeny Kuznetsov was a guy that took a lot of flack from, I mean, a lot of smart people, and rightfully so, for kind of how he had played the couple years after the Caps run, in addition to all of his off-ice issues. This year, he kind of seems like a man just kind of having fun again, but not just having fun, but also committed to his craft. He's never going to be a guy who's going to, you know, stay 10 hours after practice and in the weight room. But he's a guy that when he's on, he's a world beater. And we've certainly seen that with Kuznetsov this season. What are your general thoughts on his play? Kind of most importantly, I mean, where are the Capitals without him this year?
Yeah, I mean, he's been very good this year, generally, and without him, they're probably, you know, fighting with the Islanders for that last playoff spot. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, they're in big trouble without him. He's been very good. He sort of seems to have like regained that spark, and he is, to me, maybe the most interesting guy on the ice in a lot of the games that he plays. You know, he's creative, and his sort of wizardry and his spark and enthusiasm and are really fun to watch, and they're interesting on a team that's not necessarily full of fun and interesting players and fun and interesting systems. So yeah, I mean, God bless Cousy for turning it around. Let's hope it keeps going in this direction, and hopefully, you know, with Nick Backstrom rounding into form, they're back to what they thought they had in their top two centers, because they're certainly paying them a shitload of money, and they need to be very, very good for this team to do anything at any point.
What do you think about, I mean, you mentioned top two centers, but obviously when the Capitals were most successful, whether that be during their President's Trophy runs or during their Stanley Cup run, Lars Eller was a productive member of that team. Obviously scored a lot of big goals. He's getting older now. I mean, Lars is no longer kind of a young guy, and at 32 years of age, do you feel like he's slowing down, or what are we looking at here? He's got 21 points through 41 games. Hasn't quite looked like the guy that I think of when I think of Lars Eller.
Damn it, String. Like, I don't want to say anything bad about Lars Eller ever, ever. So I'm going to not. And okay. We can next question.
All right. We'll just assume that is an answer in and of itself. Other guy we could talk about, one without any emotional attachment, or at least I don't have any emotional attachment to, Justin Schultz. He's a guy that I just don't really know what the Capitals are getting from him. I mean, he seems like the kind of guy that's been vaunted for this offensive upside. I'm not sure I really see that. I don't really see him. I'm not noticing him a lot, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I guess that's okay, usually from a defenseman. But I feel like the Capitals kind of expected him to kind of do what Kempany did during the Cup run, right? He was supposed to be another guy who could move the puck well. And I'm not sure he's doing that. Any thoughts on Schultz?
Yeah, I think they expected even more than that. I think that they thought they were getting a guy who could be a big puck mover for them. They're certainly paying him enough. He's over $4 million. I think you're sort of right on that he is one of the least interesting guys on the team. Like, he does kind of nothing. And, you know, I don't see him out there being terrible too often, although, you know, a fair amount, but he's not really contributing what you would want for that salary. So I certainly think that as this team looks towards the trade deadline and towards getting Mantha back, that would be a salary that I would look to possibly be moving on from, because I don't think they're getting value from him that they'd like to see from that guy. And, you know, they've got their top four. They've got, you know, Carlson and Ferravari have been solid enough. And then Orlov and Jensen have been really terrific at times. I mean, that they've, if you want to look at the two most underrated guys on the entire team, it's probably those two dudes. Yeah. And playing in a pair together, they've been terrific. So, you know, they've got those top four. And I'm a big fan of TVR as a defensive defenseman on the cheap in that third pair. Schultz does nothing. I mean, $4 million for a third pair guy who, you know, I'm not sure what he's doing out there for that money. So that is the dude that I would definitely be looking to move on from, and a guy who I don't think has lived up to what they probably expected from him.
Now, obviously people would have said the same thing about Nick Jensen probably about a year ago. What about their two games made you think that Jensen could turn it around, but a guy like Schultz probably is what he is?
I mean, that's a good question. That, you know, I think that, you know, the reality, first of all, I mean, they were paying Jensen a lot less. It's less of an investment, less of a worry if it doesn't work out. But, you know, in reality, they've got, you know, sometimes you hit and sometimes you miss. And, you know, Jensen's, to me, maybe initially they thought they had something better. I think they thought they had Matt Niskanen's replacement in the second pair, right-handed defenseman. It just took them a little longer to get there, I think. Maybe things were backed up in terms of the lineup with when Brendan Dillon was here and, you know, Orlov, Dillon, and the lot. They just weren't really willing to give him that chance. But he's had a great year. He's certainly outperformed his contract. I mean, he's a guy making $2.5 million, and you know, probably the third best defenseman on the team, and that's if you like John Carlson. I know some people, I know some people don't. But you know, in terms of, you know, market value or something like that, Carlson's value, I think, is pretty indisputable. But I really do like what Nick Jensen brings to that back line. Not so much with Justin Schultz.
Yeah, that's where I am as well. Last defenseman I want to touch on. I know we're at about 34 minutes. I don't know how long you want to go, but
that's fine.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've got to go into it. Martin Färavaara, guy that I loved how he started the year. He's a guy that Caps fans have been waiting to see, which is a weird thing to say about a guy who does not play a sexy brand of hockey. But, you know, he was expected to be another, like, really just solid guy. Maybe a bit like Dmitry Orlov kind of was before he started moving the puck better. I think Färavaara had a great start to his season. I feel like he's not playing at the same level he did at the start of the year. What are your kind of thoughts on his recent play?
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on that. I think he was surprisingly good early on, especially playing alongside Carlson, which we've seen some guys struggle with, some decent defensemen struggle there and some not decent defensemen struggle there as well. But, you know, I think he really settled in well in that pair, and I do think he's dropped off a bit. I don't know how much of that is a 22-year-old playing in his first full NHL season, hitting a little bit of a wall, and how much of that is a regression to his actual play. I think he's a very good defenseman, with a bright future. But I would agree that, you know, maybe he needs to take a minute and refocus and, get back to playing the way he was earlier. But, you know, that goes for a lot of guys on this team. So I'm certainly not picking on Martin Färavaara here.
For sure. You already touched on this a little bit, and I don't want to beat a dead horse, but Connor McMichael's ice time, obviously concerning. He's a guy who's was kind of touted as the best Capitals prospect since Jacob Vrana, at least on the offensive side of the puck. Where did it go wrong for him? I mean, he's a guy, he's getting the Tom Wilson treatment, but he doesn't bring what Tom Wilson used to bring in the bottom six. I mean, what can McMichael do to either get himself back in the good graces, or what can he do so wrong that he can at least go somewhere where he can actually play some minutes?
Well, I mean, I don't know that it went wrong anywhere. I think that, as is often the case with young players, you make a couple glaringly bad defensive plays, and the coach remembers them forever. And it takes a while to earn back some of that trust. You know, I know people want to say that Laviolette won't play rookies, won't play kids. He's just one of these old fuddy-duddy coaches or whatever. I guess that they're ignoring the fact that he has a rookie, a 22-year-old in his top defensive pairing, getting, you know, first pair of minutes. So I think I would suggest people take things on a case-by-case basis and look at things a little more closely. I think that Laviolette trusts that Dowd line a lot, and for whatever reason, and essentially thinks they're not going to fuck something up if they're out there. So, you know, they can take defensive responsibility. They can take defensive zone draws. They can take offensive responsibilities and do some things offensively. Like, you know, Hathaway and Dowd have probably contributed in terms of points per minute that they've got to be towards the top of fourth liners, you know, nominal fourth liners. Those guys have been, and then there's another guy on the line or whatever. But then, you know, with McMichael, I think Laviolette likes to sort of see how games are going and how guys are playing. And I don't know. I wish I had a better explanation for it. I don't. I really I don't get it. They seem to they say that they're happy with his development. They want to bring him along at the appropriate pace. Laviolette has had success bringing along young guys in Nashville. Forget the name of the guy in Nashville.
Forsberg.
that could be it. Maybe some other guys as well, but. You know, I'm not really worried about McMichael's development being stunted or, you know, any of that stuff. He's still with this team. He's still practicing. He's still getting minutes with this team. I do think he should be probably getting some more minutes and playing, seeing a little more ice time and be put in positions where he can succeed. You know, if you're going to – maybe it's putting your bad eggs in one basket by putting – McMichael and Sprong on the same line makes it easier to bench that line entirely when you shorten the bench or whatever. But, you know, why not play McMichael up with Backstrom, maybe with Backstrom and Sherry or something? You know, give him a chance to succeed. Give him a chance to do something.
Yeah, and if our listeners are not aware that this is a thing that happens with all coaches, looking at a piece from JP from December 19th, 2014, titled "The Play That Doomed Andre Burakovsky." So there was it's a long stretch where a guy can feel like he's doing a lot, being productive, and for one reason or another, coach won't be happy with what he's doing. And the hope certainly has to be for McMichael that he can turn it around. I mean, it is interesting that the Capitals' two best cost-controlled offensive weapons are the two that just cannot buy minutes right now. I mean, McMichael and Sprong both on RFA deals, both getting under $1 million and not getting a lot of time over the boards. And in Sprong's case, I mean, the guy's got 8 goals in very few minutes. So good for him. John, talk about goaltending. We've already talked about it, talked about how it's failed. We said for it to get better, the Capitals have to make a splash, right? I mean, they don't need replacement level goaltending. You know, I think there are interesting middle of the pack, like league average save percentage goaltenders out there. And then, of course, there's one who has the potential to steal games in Marc-Andre Fleury, who sounds like he might not even want to come to the Cats. But putting that aside, I mean, is there an option in net besides Fleury? Or, I mean, if you're the Caps, is it Fleury or you got to stand with what you got?
Yeah, you know, I think you go big or go home for sure here, because, like, you know, everybody's romanticizes the notion of bringing Braden Holtby back. I'm not confident that Braden Holtby is definitely better than the two guys they have here. You know, he's had a nice season, but that followed some not nice seasons, including the end of his time here. He wasn't great. You know, so, you know, I don't know that move would necessarily move the needle on this team. I guess with a guy like Fleury, it would come down to cost and like what they see as the cost. And you know, to be clear, Fleury hasn't been a Vezina guy this year. He's granted he's playing on a pretty crappy team, but you know, I don't know that he's, I don't know how much he's got left in the tank and how great he is right now, but you know, there might be other guys out there. You know, I don't think that, I think they should take a look at Varlamov, bringing him back. I think that's a guy, he's got another year left after this year when, you know, there's no reason to think the Caps won't be in the same exact position next year, I think. So, you know, a guy with having two years, it may not be the worst idea. So, I mean, they're definitely guys. It depends how big they want to go. And I think that if you're going to make a move, you probably want to go big because it's obviously a notoriously wonky position. And you never know when you're going to get a crystal ball Hue, and you never know when you're going to get you know, whatever Halak was when he was here. So right. So yeah. So it's hard to say. It's hard to say. I don't know what options are available if they could get a great goaltender, because that seems to be, it's hard to win without a good goaltender, especially come postseason time. And it's like having a good quarterback in the NFL, you know, and it's awfully hard to win in the NFL. And if the Caps are going into the Eastern Conference playoffs with the goalies that are in the Eastern Conference, they're, you know, all right up there at the top, most of them right up at the top in anybody's, you know, midseason Vezina balloting or whatever. You know, going in against those guys with the goalies they've got is like, you know, probably like going into the AFC playoffs where you've got like Mahomes and Burrows and Josh Allen and even, you know, Josh Herbert and all those guys, and going into those playoffs with just some average Joe, it's just not gonna end well for you. This team isn't good enough everywhere else to get by on mediocre goaltending. Yep. And, you know, like you've said, at times in the past, they have been. And, you know, maybe case in point, 2018, that team certainly didn't have great goaltending going into the playoffs. But they were a good team and they played well. And there are other times when this team was good enough everywhere else to win if they got, you know, mediocre goaltending, and, you know, often they didn't get that. So, you know, to me, this team isn't good enough to do anything, significant without, a fairly meaningful upgrade in goal. The only question is whether they're interested in doing it.
Yeah. Last thing, you know, what's crazy is that the Capitals were 29.3% on the power play in the playoffs the year they won the Stanley Cup, which I did not remember it being that good. I remember some big power play goals, but I did not remember them scoring on almost one out of every three opportunities, which is just
pretty good.
Pretty damn good. I guess that's what Edmonton did in the regular season last year too. So that's pretty crazy, yeah, as well. John, we've talked for about 45 minutes. I've asked you every question that's at the top of my mind. What did I miss? What else do you want to touch on?
I don't know. I mean, it's this team is in a spot, right? They're clearly not going to throw in the towel and rebuild. They're not going to do that while the big guy's here. And, but at the same time, you know, how many assets do you push in an absolutely stacked conference when your team, you know, isn't at that, at the level that some of those other teams are? It's a tough decision. You know, they've got to do something. What they're doing now isn't working, but at the same time, like, it's hard to really, think about, what that would look like and what that would mean, you know, especially with the cap constraints they're under. So, you know, I don't envy, Brian McClellan over these next, this next month or whatever until the trade deadline. There's some real tough decisions to make, not only about the short term of this team, but the longer term, which, to be completely honest, I'm a little less concerned about. I think that you take your chances when you can take your chances and go for it when you can. But man, it's going to take a lot for this team to look like a team that can come out of the Eastern Conference. And maybe those moves are out there. Maybe it's time to go all in. Maybe it's time to kind of stand pat and regroup. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's time to, you got to keep a little, some stuff in the cupboard, because you need people to be making sure Ovechkin can get the puck with an empty net here over the next few years. You know, you gotta.
Yeah.
One team, one goal. Legs feed the wolf, as Barry Trotz like to say, and they need some fresh legs to do that. So
yeah.
You know, the Capitals have traded away a lot of draft picks over the years, and they got what mattered for it. They got their Stanley Cup.
They've no complaints.
Exactly right. Greatest goal scorer of all time. So I mean, unless there's a real shot. I wouldn't make a move unless it made me think the Capitals could win at least two rounds, I think. On anything after the second round, you know, then anybody can win it. But this is a team that hasn't won a playoff series since they won the Stanley Cup. I know I certainly would like to see that happen again before Ovechkin leaves the Caps. And I unfortunately do think it will just continue to get harder over these next few seasons. So,
yep.
But... you know, either way, banner will still fly, right? Right, JP?
Forever and ever. Amen.
Yeah. My math might be wrong on this because I did it in Microsoft Calculator and I could not find save percentage in the playoffs in 2018. But I have that the Capitals had a save percentage of 912 in the 2018 postseason, which is certainly not much better than league average. So,
no.
Your point about them definitely now. Brings back to that conversation about Samsonov and Vanacek, though. There were certainly some key timely saves that made up that average number. And these numbers, again, I mean, this one includes Grubauer in the first two games where his save percentage was God knows how awful. So,
right. But I mean, if you even just look at, that number, if that is the number, if it's 912, Which of the Caps goalies right now has a 912 save percentage?
Vanacek's 915.
Right.
So, and Samsonov with that cool and collected 902. So
yeah, Samsonov's not even remotely close to that. And Vanacek, yeah, to his credit. I mean, is Vitek Vanacek the guy you want to go to war with in the playoffs? Is he the guy that's going to win you four rounds?
Capitals obviously didn't think so when they left him unprotected in the expansion draft. So,
yeah, but they traded to get him back. So,
which was a very economical deal to think that they got him back for less than what they traded Brendan Dillon for. You'd think good asset management would have had Seattle take Dillon and then trade him. On their own. But hey,
boy, did they screw that one up.
Yeah, they were not able to recreate the magic of the Vegas Golden Knights. But
I'm saying the Caps at 916 in the playoffs, by the way, in 2018.
Good. I'm glad you had where are you looking? I had to like try to
Hockey Reference.
good. I tried to take their shots against per game played, less their goals against per game played. To get
all right,
them,
dumbass. Look at Hockey Reference.
I was on NHL.com as we're going through. All right, you gotta, I gotta follow right. along. Fact check.
Right. But, so they're you know, fairly average playoff goaltending. What is higher than either of their goalies now?
Are you? You're, that's all situations.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's
right. But and 916 is a little higher than league average, but the shitty teams that drag down the league average don't make the playoffs.
Yep.
I bet that 916 is around the average for playoff teams, if not lower than, probably lower than the average for the teams that actually make the playoffs. So you go into the playoffs with, you know, quote unquote league average goaltending, you're going to get waxed.
Yep.
You know, it has, you have to be looking at like, average amongst playoff teams, probably. And then, and again, that's if you want to just saw a team off at in goal, then you better be able to beat them 5-on-5 and special teams, you know, and beat them on volume and, you know, beat them on, I guess, shot quality. And right now, I don't think the Caps are beating too many teams on special teams. And, you know, whether they can beat some of these teams in volume is another question that they might have a little more luck in, but depending on who the team is.
Yeah. Quality is not, I mean, you talked about how it felt like the only guy who was really catching your eye really to watch was Kuznetsov. And that's because he's a shot quality machine, not necessarily seeing a lot of it when other guys are on the ice. Lots of gritty, determined play, I'd say, for the Capitals. When the bottom six, which is getting top 6 minutes, is on the ice. For slight redemption, I will say Braden Holtby had a 922 save percentage in the playoffs for
17-18. Yeah.
So NHL.com is not totally useless. But that
no,
is...
I thank you for letting me know that Braden Holtby was good in the 2018 playoffs. I hadn't, prior to being informed, I was unaware, but now, did he make any like key saves at any time?
I don't know. Maybe, okay. Maybe one that someone would call like the save or something like that.
Oh, okay.
But, Marc-Andre Fleury was 927, which is interesting. And there were a good amount of goalies that played at least one series that were up at that range. So he was very good, but he was not.
He wasn't Kolzig in 98.
Yeah, he was not Yaroslav Halak in 2010, but he was very, very good. That is for sure. And he was also really good when it mattered. He talked, I believe in a recent interview, he talked about one save that he made in Game 5 that really stood out to him, helps show the resilience of the team. And unfortunately for me, a lot of the time when I think about Holtby in the playoffs, besides the save, I think about Game 7 against Carolina, because I'm just a bitter person, and that's just how I am.
Oh, I think about that Game 7 against the Rangers. So we all have those. We all have our memories.
Yeah, we do. But you know,
I'm glad you could bring us down at the end of this.
Well,
we were just talking about Holtby winning the cup, and
there,
you have to.
That's still there, John. The banner still flies for Braden Holtby. I think his banner is probably just done flying for the Washington Capitals, and I think that's probably how it should be.
Yep.
But let's wrap this bad boy up. I had a lot of fun having you on, John. It's been a long time, and I look forward to getting back
always
together. John, everyone knows where to find your stuff. They got to read your piece on Thursday. You know, get some of that self-pain about how many goals Ovi's missing out on, and then make sure you cite back to John's piece that's going to drop this week if Ovechkin is not able to beat Gretzky by about, you know, if he finishes
if
by
he comes
five
up
goals short.
Short.
Yeah,
yeah,
just know this is why John talked about
blame,
it right here.
You can blame Blaine Forsythe.
Yeah, Blaine Forsythe, and he might not be long tenured. I think he's going to make it to the end of the season, but
yeah, I think so.
We'll see. On behalf of myself and John Press, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Jabers Rink Radio. I hope you guys will come back and listen to us soon.